Hi everyone, this is Greg V with Real Estate Legends. I'm here with a classic legend of an architect, Peter Nicholas, with the Nicholas
Design Collaborative.
And we're so excited to be here. Peter's made so many fantastic designs and things. And let's go back to the grade school and high school, Peter. What was that like for you?
So I grew up in San Diego, California. And for most of my youth, I lived within 5 minutes of the beach and 5 minutes of the bay. And so I kind of grew up surfing. And the high school that I went to was, you could stand up on the athletic fields and you could actually see the waves.
Nice.
And so when the waves were good and Santa Ana winds were blowing, which has been very negative lately for Los Angeles.
Yes.
It would make for great, it would sort of hold up the waves because the wind was coming from the desert instead of from the ocean. So it would kind of hold them up and you could ride them longer. So when that would happen and it was a nice day, half the school would be out.
So in high school, you were surfing a lot.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Were there other sports that you were interested in?
I was a baseball player and a basketball player. I'd say that baseball was my best sport. I ended up playing in college, and I played for Cal Poly Pomona, and...
Wow, that's a good team.
They won the national championship.
I was going to say, that's impressive.
And I did it for a couple of years, but then it was too much to have architecture as a major and have to be practicing, you know, every single day and doing doubleheaders on weekends and stuff and staying up all night doing my studies. So I ended up leaving, but then the next year they went to the Final Four, and then the year after that they won the national championship.
So you could have been a senior on the championship team.
Could have been.
So in grade school, did you get an inkling you might be an architect?
So when I was in junior high school, I took a drafting class where we'd be doing drawings of, you know, machine parts and things like that. You do plan, section, elevation, axonometric of, you know, a machine part. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really I thought that that's what it was about. It was about drawing. And then I continued to take classes in high school. Kind of did the same thing. It was really a drafting course. It wasn't an architecture course, to say. And so I also, I did drafting for a local home builder. And so I was, you know, my introduction was very much nuts and bolts and drafting. And so I thought, well, this is what it is. I kind of enjoy
fundamentals. Good to get into the fundamentals.
Yeah. And so from there, you know, so I graduated from high school. I applied to one university, which is very different from these days with kids.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, which is, you know, center state in California. And it just so happened it's probably, you know, the most prominent architecture program for a public school in the country. And so you apply, you get an interview, you have a portfolio, and your grades and all that, your test scores, and I didn't get it. So then I went to the local junior college, San Diego Mesa College, and I ended up playing baseball there for a year. And on our team, seven people got drafted to the majors.
Wow.
And it was after that I ended up going to Cal Poly. But so then the next year I applied to two schools, both Cal Polys. One's in Pomona, one's in San Luis Obispo. And I didn't get into either of them. And so my family had a friend who was a professor in urban design, and it wasn't impacted like the architecture program was. And so I ended up...
You backdoored it.
Yeah, I kind of backdoored it. And it was the same, you know, class track. And so I got to know the professors. And so when I went to apply mid-year for the next year to get into the architecture school, the people that ended up interviewing me were my design professor and the RA in my dorm, who was an architecture student.
That helps.
And so I got in, probably by luck. And so I did that.
Oh, by persistence.
By persistence. That's definitely my thing. But so I got in, it was a four-year program, but then I think it was during my third year, they added a five-year program, which is a professional degree. So if you have that, then you're able to get a license quicker. You know, otherwise, if you had a four-year degree, then you had to get a, I think you had to go 2 more years of experience before you could get a license. And the license is like a 5-day test. It's very rigorous.
So during those summers when you were in college, did you apply your architecture to some of the things you were doing?
I worked for some firms in the summer, a couple of firms in the summer. It you know, was an introduction to, you know, what it's like to be in an office. And I remember the first place I worked was this kind of wild guy. His name was Edgar Huxley. And he bought a Ferrari as his company car. And his office was like two blocks from the beach. And so I would go surfing at lunch. And I remember he sent me out on a visit for a client who was a business, and they had like a little courtyard building, and I did a design, a landscape design for the courtyard, and they're like, yeah, go see this company. So I'm in my my light blue OP shorts and my Hang Ten shirt,
exactly,
and sandals, and I show up at this office, and they're all in three-piece suits. And I was so embarrassed, and I had like a wad of, you know, trace paper in my hand, and it's like, they didn't tell me, so I didn't know. And so from then on, I knew better.
So you graduate from college, mm-hmm. and then you get a job? Is that why you moved?
No, actually, I moved back to San Diego after going to Cal Poly Pomona. Oh, I should add one other thing. So, where I was going with the 5-year degree was that in my fourth year, I had an opportunity to go to Italy, to study in Italy. The Cal State program had a school in Florence, and it's the thing that really changed my life.
So all that old architecture is what really got you into this modern stuff, huh?
Well, not really, but it let me know where I wanted, it informed me on where I wanted to be. I wanted to be in a real city. I wanted to be in an older environment, you know, and didn't really have that in San Diego.
No, I didn't know where in California. It grew too fast, and it was a different deal than like Chicago. I have all this architecture.
Right, and ironically, after going into urban design and then getting into architecture, I became more interested in urban design because of the way Italian cities grow, and they start as a 4-block medieval town, and then the walls around the city, the fortification walls, expand during each generation. And it was just so interesting. You know, it was such a great thing for me to be exposed to, a different culture. And so I was there for a year. I came back, did my 5th year of college. And then after I graduated, I went back to San Diego, and I worked for about a 40-man firm there, and I met somebody who was a really great mentor to me. And I was sort of like, you know, he was the principal, he was doing all the design, and I was like the design kid, you know, that worked with him. And really had a great time. I worked there for about 2 years, but ultimately I was looking to get back to the East Coast, or to go to the East Coast. And so I applied to all the Ivy League schools, and I got into University of Pennsylvania. And it was a full-year program because they had a 5-year degree, so it was 3 semesters. And then after I finished there, I had decided that I wanted to be in Chicago. I'd been here a couple of times. My father grew up here, and I was just really intrigued by what was happening in Chicago versus Philadelphia, where I went to school. And Philadelphia didn't have the energy Chicago had. Philadelphia,
it's spread out. Doesn't even have street signs in a lot of the suburbs and stuff.
You know, the people that lived in and around Philadelphia back then were not supportive of building things and, you know, being excited about being in Philadelphia. Most of the money sat in the mainland, which is outside of the city, and they had nothing to do with Philadelphia. So that was concerning to me. I loved Philadelphia, a beautiful place, but ultimately, I came here because I thought there'd be more opportunity.
But your first main design on your website was 1990, and it was something in San Diego.
Right, but I was already in Chicago.
You were already in Chicago, and you designed for that. That's great.
Right. I did that house, and actually, that was sort of an introduction into development, because I was working at a place called Booth Hansen in Chicago, And I decided when I got married the first time that I would venture out and start my own firm. And the opportunity was my father bought a property in San Diego, and it was like a pool that was sort of sunken in a canyon for a house next to it that got sold. And so I designed about a 4,000 square foot house. And
did you keep the pool inside or something?
No, actually, but you know, so it was sunk down to this canyon. And so from the street, you saw a two-story building, and then you took a driveway down, and then it went into that kind of canyon area with a third, you know,
it was like a solar house.
Lower story. It was also, it was in the flight pattern in San Diego, so we did some interesting things with soundproofing. But long story short was that we started it in, I think, 1990, and by the time we finished it, the bottom dropped out of the economy. And we were hoping to sell it for $1.2 million, and that wasn't happening. It ended up selling for, I think it was like $8.99. So we didn't do well on that, but learned a valuable lesson. There's some things you can control, and there's some things that you can't, you know?
Right.
And this was just an economic, you know, downturn, and it lasted for probably 10 years. You know, into the early 80s when things started to go up again. And, you know, I remember in Chicago, that was like the first development project they did in Chicago was taking the two flat and renovating it into a single family. And back then, you know, the cycles were faster. So we figured, okay, we got an opportunity now, we better get it out, get it sold. And little did we know that that was gonna extend, you know, into the 90s, where, and...
Which area was the two-flat in?
Lakeview.
Okay.
So I did a few of those. I made little money on them, but I have, you know, I'm an architect. I have an architecture practice. And so after kind of struggling with those, I ended up doing, you know, just doing projects, you know, for people, single-family houses and additions and renovations. And then I got an opportunity to do a bigger project. There was a guy named Michael Silver who owned a company called Equus, which is a company that does commercial real estate in Chicago. And he was doing a new single family house in Dana Point, which is in California. And we designed this beautiful, probably a 14,000 square foot house.
Wow.
Right on the water. And he ended up not doing it because it just was taking too long. He was an impatient person. So he ended up selling the property and then buying a house up the street, which was a beautiful house. So that was done. But he introduced me to a guy named Tim Horowitz, who's a developer in Chicago, has a company called Horowitz Matthews.
Oh, God. They've been champions forever.
Right. And so he worked with Papa George James a lot. And then they had a falling out. And then I was the next
opportunity.
Yeah, there's an opportunity that presented itself.
Peter.
And you know, we did this 44 unit townhouse project on South Shore Drive in Hyde Park. And it was a really great project, won a bunch of awards. The experience of working with this developer almost killed me. I lost probably 20 pounds during the process, and
I
couldn't sleep at night, and it was terrible. And I won't go into all the problems, but only to say that it was a great learning experience, because I learned that you have to be really careful who you work with.
We know what they say, though. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Absolutely. I'm a big proponent of that.
Yes, you're still surviving.
Exactly. So, you know, made it through that, and I've been doing a lot of, you know, single family. We're like right now, I'd say our strongest part of our architecture business is doing single families, doing you know, really nice houses. And as we had talked about before, most of my stuff is very modernist. And I got that from being Californian, being in Southern California, and early modernists. So people like Richard Neutra and Rudolf Schindler and Irving Gill were all people who were operating kind of in the turn of the century and, you know, first part of the 1900s. and we're doing these really innovative things. And I was always really intrigued by it. And so I kind of brought that with me to Chicago. And for the first part of my career, I'd say that a lot of things I was doing were derivative, you know, meaning like I'd look at somebody like Irving Gill in San Diego, who's done a lot of projects there and really prevalent. And I did a project in that style, which is this first development project that I did. And then here, like the first single family house commission that I got was in Lincolnwood. And we did kind of a write-in single family house, you know, so taking to other people's languages and applying them, because not having a lot of experience and a lot of reputation, then people know who Wright is in Chicago, or people know who Gill is in San Diego. So as I've gone forward, I think I've sort of developed my own style. And
you definitely have developed your own style.
But it's you know, and it's sort of what
phenomenal
makes me go. You know, it's like what gets me up in the morning.
Well, I remember that I was having a conversation with you and this gentleman saying, well, wouldn't you consider doing something transitional for me? And you were like, absolutely not. This is the kind of work I do. This, if you don't like it, then go someone else, because this is what I do. And I was proud of you for that, because it's hard to get to that point where you can turn down business just because it's business and you want to work on things that inspire you, because your work is very inspiring to other people. And we'll get you some pictures of some of those works so you can see what I'm talking about.
Right. And so, yeah, as you get into your career, the longer you're in the career, the better things get in terms of having a reputation and meeting people and getting more references and so forth. But back in probably around 2010, I had a partner and we split, and then I, you know, kind of reconstituted the business and went from Nicholas Clark Architects to Nicholas Design Collaborative. And I made the website where it's made the pictures of the projects very prominent, and I only put things up that I liked. And so then the people that were coming to me were people who came to me for what I do, not coming to me and saying like I like a French provincial thing.
Right, you thank know? God.
And so what's happened, you know, after years of doing that and doing development here and there is, and what I really like about development is that I look back to the Italian masters like Brunelleschi, who built the Duomo in Florence. And he, you know, had a benefactor, and they did everything from start to finish, you know, all the way through construction. And that to me, you know, the thing that I really like about development is that I can be that person. You know, I've got people that can invest, or I can invest my own money, but then I go from design to building to selecting all the finishes to selling the thing. So I have complete control for the entire process. I'm not doing it for the money. It's because of the design aspect of it. There's also the possibility of making more money, but there's also a lot more risk. And there's definitely been projects where I haven't done well. There's been projects that I've done very well. But I guess the thing I like about it is that I have no one to blame but myself.
Well, and you're tough on yourself on the punch list. I know that, because your stuff was meticulous as can be. And you've got a good eye for it. So I'm sure your partners and your investors appreciate that.
Right. So mostly I've been, you know, using my own money and doing smaller projects, single family houses, and finished a 4-unit townhouse project in Highland Park, which is very successful. And, you know, now I'm starting to get into bigger projects, and I have much better knowledge with the help of others of how to put the economics together of it, and to have investors, and to be able to line it out for them and say, here's what it looks like, here's what we expect. And I'm currently working on a 20-unit project that's on 5830 North Broadway in Chicago. And going through some ups and downs on the economics of it. There's, you know, but
There's challenges.
There's
hard to make things pencil out.
It's always like that.
It's always like that. That's part
issues
of the
with the city. There's issues with zoning. There's
issues with the supply chain.
Right.
There's issues with the workers. There's always issues. There's issues with the weather. A lot of things come down the pike, and I'm glad that you've weathered the storm.
Right.
And you haven't quit.
Right. So I'm really anxious to get through this project and to get that done, and then to move on to bigger projects, because I'm learning that 20 units of multifamily for an apartment building is small. And if we can scale that and have economy of scale, then there's better opportunities. People will invest more, and it's just, you can do better projects because you have more budget.
When I was walking through your project in Highland Park on St. John's, and it's right there next to my grade school that I went to, I could visualize you taking like a whole big block and make it almost like a Zen garden of housing. And I'm sure you've thought about something like that, because your stuff is very Zen.
Well, things, you know, I mean, it all kind of goes back to my upbringing and where I grew up in Southern California, and, you know, having great weather and being able to take advantage of that amazing weather. And I think it applies here in Chicago, because the land we get is very limited. You know, in Chicago, the standard piece of land is 25 by 125.
Yeah, it's tight.
So what I always try to do is I always try to take advantage of every inch of outdoor space and make it so that it's the focus of what's going on in the house. And then, you know, you're facing public areas, so you're facing the street, or you're facing your yard. You make that yard as big as you can.
Oh, and on St. John's, you made those outdoor spaces another living room, basically.
Right.
It was an outdoor living room. And yeah, that's a fantastic thing to be able to do.
Yeah, that actually, that design was something that I'd seen in Los Angeles. I have a friend who's an architect, and he lives in a kind of a historic modernist building. And it's a bunch of penthouses. They're all actually all in one story, but you kind of come up, you know, as a pedestrian on one side to enter into the building, and then it all opens up to this nice garden courtyard on the backside. And I always thought, boy, I really want to do one of these. And there's actually a house that I did on Magnolia called the Periscope House. And it was a building that was probably built in the 50s by an architect, and there was a weird building that has like an 8-foot wall in the front, and then there's a courtyard behind that that's probably 20, 25 feet wide, and then the house behind that. And so what I did with that was I added a piece on the front that kind of cantilevered over the wall, and then underneath that there was a family room, so half that courtyard was left. And so we faced that family room with like a wall of glass onto that courtyard, and then did some additions on the back that enlivened the whole thing. It was a terrible.
Transformed it.
It was horrible. And so we kept the frame of the house part of it, and then we added these small additions to it and changed the whole palette, and it came out just fantastic. So that was before the Highland Park project. That was about 2,500 square feet, and it had a courtyard and a backyard. And so I'm looking at this long and narrow Highland Park project and thinking, that house was really a great house because it wasn't too big. It was about 2,500 square feet. We could do that here, and we could do a courtyard, and on this one we can do a roof deck on top of it and really take advantage of the outdoor space. And people didn't get it.
Until it was finished.
The thing that happened on the Periscope House was I got a client early on, and I bought the property from a friend of mine who was going to tear it down, and I negotiated a deal with him, and then we just started to design it. And we waited a year because he said, look, either buy it now, we're going to wait a year, and buy it in a year, and then I can take care of long-term capital gains, and I'll do better. Fine. So we did these series of renderings, and then, do you know the blog Curbed?
Yes.
So Curbed is a real estate blog in Chicago and other cities too. But I sent the images to the editor of Curbed, and I said, would you be interested in blogging about this? 5 minutes later, a guy writes me back and he goes, we're going to put it in tomorrow. And I wrote him back and said, no, you got to give me a week so I can start a website. And so anyway, we waited a week, sent it over, said, mentioned my website for my business and the website for the project. And in the first day it went up, we got 500 hits. The second, wow. 100, the second day we got 500 hits, and within 2 weeks it was sold. And we sold it without a broker, sorry.
Hey, marketing board.
And we had a series of meetings with potential buyers. And the last people we met with were really interested. And they're like, but we want to go and we want to take a look at the area and look at the property and so forth. And this was right before Labor Day. And so I went off to New York to watch the US Open. And then I get an email while I'm waiting in LaGuardia to go back. And it's somebody else, not the people I had talked to, because they were going to meet with me like the Wednesday of the week, when I got back. And this guy says, I love the project. I know the, I know where the property is. I know the area. What do I need to do to get this? And I said, it was on a Monday. And I said, meet with me tomorrow.
Meet with me tomorrow and overpay a little bit.
Well, so we're sitting right here in this room. And I said, here's the deal. It's full price. I haven't bought the property yet, but I'll transfer it to you. You close on the property. Plus $75,000, so I can get the project started. I've got a permit already, and we can get started. And the way we'll do is instead of waiting to the end to pay for the whole thing, it's like you bought the property, and you pay for the renovation as we go along, renovation addition as we go along. And so it's handled just like if I'm doing it as an architect and doing.
He's his own title company.
Right, but I'm the GC.
Right, so do you have there's waivers still, probably, or not?
Yeah, so throughout the whole thing. So we went from start to finish. We got paid as we went along. We didn't have to sell it. We didn't have to buy the land. And we didn't have to pay a broker. So
okay.
It was a model of what seemed like, wow, if I could do this, this is good. So I tried to do that in Highland Park, but one person bought pre-sale before we started construction. And then it was almost all the way to the end until people saw it almost all the way built, and then the last three sold like really quickly.
Well, you had no parking. If someone wanted to, you had a little bit of guest parking.
Right.
But people wanted parties and things, and there's no parking on St. John's. There's no parking on Sheridan.
Yeah.
It just was.
But they've learned that they can park in the
driveway. Right.
That we have.
Or you park a block away and walk. Isn't that amazing? You can actually do that.
Right. But it was a struggle though, because there are two ugly buildings right next to it. So you basically had to put in a wall of trees.
Right.
And I wasn't getting a lot of positive input from my broker. But we got it all sold in the end, and it was a struggle because it was during COVID and we had supply chain issues and we had costs that went up like 40%, and it was.
Well, there's a challenge in Highland Park. The impact fees are $24,000 a unit just for the rights to build.
Yeah.
And then they don't help you out there. I remember when I was building my building there, the planners were basically saying, oh, there was one guy who was trying to get his zoning changed for 3 years till he went bankrupt, and they're laughing and joking with me. I'm like, you think that's funny? We're here putting our ass on the line. We're trying to make something positive for your community. But then you realize, oh, a lot of these guys don't live in the community. They don't really care.
Right.
And then the group of buyers that would come to the place, I mean, I had some of them come 8 times, basically praying I was going to fail so that they could steal the place. And sure enough, a year after I had sold the top unit, it sold for $600,000 more. So
I remember that.
Sometimes when you have something that's all completed and done and it's been marinating a while, then they get it. But trying to sell up front new construction in the North Shore is very hard. And so right now you're doing a lot of development. Are you doing some side?
We're doing, we're building a house in Lakeview. And so we are the architects and the design builders. So we're participating in the construction. We're doing a new house in Buchanan, Michigan, which is in, like an hour and a half from Chicago. That's about a 5,000 square foot house.
Whoa, that's got to be something else.
For a client I've done four houses in the past. So this is the fifth house. It's
fabulous.
Best client I've ever had. And then and we're planning a new development house. There's a client of mine who's got some land, and he loves our Highland Park project and was just amazed at what we did with that piece of land and how we, you know, made it into something when nobody could make it.
No one else could figure out what to do with it. It sat there for a long time.
Yeah, there was like five or six buyers who all dropped out until we came along.
So Peter, why don't you give them your website, your phone number,
and
what kinds of business you would be looking at coming to attract you from this podcast?
All right, that sounds great. I mean, I'm starting to really kind of settle into the development thing, because I think I showed you pictures of the project that we're planning right now.
Oh, it's gorgeous. So maybe some investors, if you wanted to be a silent investor, that would be a way you could work with Peter.
Right, and you know, always single family houses or gut rehabs and things like that. Those are great projects and we enjoy working on them.
Not if you want traditional or transitional though. That's not going to probably work.
Well, but I mean, you know, I'm also, you know, like I'm really reverent to older buildings. So there's a, you know, a classic older building that's got a lot of character to it. I never suggest that you tear it down.
Right.
I'm always like, let's take this building, if you're going to addition to it, let's enhance it. You know, let's create something that's either, you know, part that feels like it's still part of it, or maybe it's in contrast to it, depending on what people want. But always have a lot of respect for older buildings and try to save them whenever we can.
Well, one of my partners, Rich Aronson, has worked with Peter forever. And I was lucky enough that Rich brought me to this property that Peter had done in Wilmette. And just how incredible this house was. It's the type of property that you get in there and you just start dreaming. And everything takes you away. And I'm very meticulous about punch lists, and I was a woodworker for a long time, and so I get that things down to the 32nd, and this guy gets it down to about the 120th or something crazy. It's something really impressive that you do, and those spaces are so incredible that we'll flash some pictures for you so you can really see what we're talking about. But this guy is phenomenal. The work he does is impressive. I'm so glad he decided to make Chicago his home, because he's really helped to enhance Chicagoland, and he's going to continue. He's a young guy, so he's got a few more years in him yet. And is there anything else you want to tell the public before we sign off here?
No, it's been great. Really.
All right, Peter, great to see you. Thank you.